The number one destination for data stolen off wireless networks isn't China or Russia. It's actually the United States, according to research from Lookout Mobile Security. But they say that makes sense because of how mobile threats travel across a network. Bob Stevens is vice president of Lookout Mobile Security and leader of their federal division and looking at the latest mobile security trends so that your agency can stay ahead of the curve. Bob, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Welcome to Industry Chatter. Thank you for coming on. Tell me what Lookout Mobile Security does beyond the obvious for your clients and customers in the federal government. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your time. So Lookout's goal is to protect all mobile devices in the world via security, right? For the government in particular, what we're looking to do is to help provide application information, mobile application information that helps them make better and more informed decisions about their mobile environment and how to protect that environment. We're also looking to protect the devices, the iOS and the Android devices that they deploy, and helping them deploy a BYOD or bring your own device type activity in the different agencies. And that's for several reasons, right? One is that they want to become more productive. Mm-hmm. They want their employees to become more productive. It's cost savings. It's not like the PC world where you can get a PC and you can keep it for years and years. People turn over their mobile devices pretty quickly to stay current, and that's really difficult for the government to stay up with, mm-hmm. right, from a cost perspective. It just makes a more flexible work environment for the employees.
Lookout is just out with the Enterprise Mobile Threats 2014 Year in Review. And a couple of points, I want to ask you about some of the highlights in a minute, but yeah, this says specifically organizations face three types of security risks with mobile devices: accidental data leakage through apps or lost or stolen devices, malicious theft of data from devices via targeted and untargeted attacks, and infiltration of protected corporate networks via compromised devices. Those sound to me, as an outside observer, like the same major threats that we've seen on the cyber landscape for the last probably half decade or so. Is the major change that we're seeing the way that attackers are trying to get into devices and networks and get access to data?
It is, yes. You know, in the mobile device world, there's a lot of different attack vectors. You know, unlike a PC, in large part is because there's more access to it, and those mobile devices are in many more places than your traditional PC. So the attackers are going after the firmware, they're going after the operating system, they're going after the applications, and by the way, we still see the applications as being the most prevalent, they're going after the devices themselves. For instance, one of the things that we discovered was that there's a piece of malware that was embedded from the beginning. So you buy the device, it's already got malware on it, mm-hmm. right? Which allows the attacker to add additional capabilities that you may not even be aware of, mm-hmm. right, on the device.
You said that apps are the most prevalent attack point. Are we seeing any progress by app makers, by app developers, in making what they provide more secure from the beginning, embedding security into the way they write them, or is that still lagging?
I think it's still lagging, and I think the reason is because the developers are really good at producing an application that does what they want it to do, mm-hmm. or what it's designed to do, with security as sort of an afterthought, right? Or somebody else will worry about that. Mm-hmm. I just need this application to do, you know, X. So
a trend that I've seen and heard a lot about in government is a trend to secure data and not devices. From the sound of that, I wonder if that's the wisest choice, though, because it seems to me the app is resident on the device. And so if the app developers are not being as careful as they should about security, it strikes me that perhaps the CISO or the CIO or someone else inside the agency should have some sense of what his or her fleet of devices, where that fleet is at security-wise on the hardware as well. Does that make sense, or am I missing something
there? No, you're right. I think that and if we talk about the firmware, mm-hmm. right? If you travel abroad, and it could be common to see a request to do a firmware upgrade while you're there. Well, that firmware upgrade could include some malware, right? So you have to start looking beyond just the applications. The data is still the most important thing.
Sure.
I think everybody agrees with that. But
yes.
The way you access it is changing.
We'll talk about the firmware concept when we get into the threats in a little more detail. This report says key mobile security takeaways from 2014 include mobile threat sophistication increasing. How is that happening, and what kinds of threats did you see in 2014 that we hadn't seen before?
So there was one, there's a couple of them, but one of them was this piece of malware we called Not Compatible. And Not Compatible started out as just a way for ticket scalpers to get more tickets, right? The IP address of the purchased has to be in the United States. So some overseas groups decided they wanted to buy a lot of tickets, and that's what it started out as. But it has morphed a lot since then, and to the point now where it's so sophisticated that they're encrypting the data that they're pulling through the device. So you as the user don't even have any idea what type of data you're helping provide,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Is that common that some of the most difficult threats that you've seen, some of the most challenging things, started as something innocuous? I don't think the idea of ticket scalpers is particularly intimidating, but that it's turned into something that is really bad is that sounds like a fascinating progression to me.
It is, and we're seeing it happen more and more on the mobile. The other one that I was going to talk about was the Malap.
Mm-hmm.
That piece of malware started out as a voice over IP, kind of innocuous, right? Was in the Google Play Store. But that combined with another application turned it into a piece of malware that exfiltrated data or the contact data to a command and control server overseas. And it also had the capability of recording voice calls. So again, something that started out simple.
Mm-hmm.
But then grew to more of a sophisticated risk.
Okay, so you mentioned the Google Play, and I noticed that a lot of the references in this report were to Android devices. Does that mean that the iOS universe is still much more secure than the Android universe, or is that changing too?
I think that's also changing. And you know, I do talk to a lot of government people who just assume that the iOS is a more secure type infrastructure. And I would argue that it's just a different... It requires a different attack vector, right? For an iOS device, you do sideloads or it's some sort of phishing attack, and that's how you get malware on the device. It's not necessarily through the applications, right? In an Android world, the most prevalent is through the application. So you just have to protect the two of them in a different way, but there's no less threat for either one of them.
I continue to be amazed by what I find when I go into to Google Play Store and even into the Amazon store. I'm not sure Amazon is as diligent as we would like them to be about what they let into their store, apps from developers that nobody's ever heard of that do things that are kind of like something that you might see. You know, my son Googled ESPN on my Android tablet not too long ago, and we found the real thing, and then like the second or third choices were things that appeared to me at least to be questionable at best.
Right.
Is that the typical way that some of those things get on, where somebody goes, well, that looks like it's close enough, and you ping that, and it's kind of an innocent way of the user doing it to him or herself? Or are the people who are pushing these things a little more, shall we say, deceitful about it?
It depends on what their target is. Right? If they're targeting an individual, they're probably more deceitful and crafty, mm-hmm. about how they get the malware on the device itself. But to your point, like Angry Birds is an example. There's thousands of versions of mm-hmm. Angry Birds that are out there, and a lot of them contain malware. You know, some of it's simple adware type malware, but it's still malware.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I mean, the typical user can't tell the difference between one or the other.
Right.
The good or the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Nobody, I don't think if you ask 20 people, one of them would be able to tell you who the developer of Angry Birds was to be able to discern between the good one and all of the others.
Right. Yeah.
Is that the major factor, though, that that there's this kind of duplication and so on of efforts to try to get people into that?
Yeah, well, it certainly makes it a lot easier,
mm-hmm.
Especially in the Android market, right? Because it is a more open and flexible market. But, you know, there's a lot of good things that come with that as well.
Sure.
Right? You just got to make sure you're protecting the device.
The second of your key takeaways in mobile security in 2014, mobile security threats grew and widely impacted organizations. This one says, Lookout found that mobile malware encounter rates in the U.S. increased 75% year over year. What does that mean exactly? What do you mean by encounter rates?
That's the number of pieces of malware that have now appeared on devices in the United States, right? Malware for mobile typically starts overseas and then moves over here. So you could look at overseas as kind of a testing ground,
mm-hmm.
And then it transitions to the United States.
This is due largely to the abundance of new ransomware campaigns like Scare Package that reached millions of users. My understanding is this is when a piece of malware takes over your computer and you have to pay X number of dollars in order to regain control of that. Is that what you're referring to?
It is, yes. And they use scare tactics to do it. You'll get pop-up messages that will scare you into actually paying it so that you can get use of your device back again.
And I've read two things about this, and I wonder if they're true according to the work that you've done. One of them is that many of them are disguised as very innocent things like, we found a virus on your computer, mm-hmm. and we'll eliminate it for $29.95 or whatever. And they act, even though they're the ones that put the virus there in the first place. And the other thing that I have seen when it comes to ransomware is that, in fact, once you're clean, you're not really clean. They've actually continued to put malware on that machine, and in many cases continue to have access to it after they've told you that they don't. Are both of those true?
Yes, both true statements, yes. In fact, one of the things that I talked about earlier was the piece of malware that's installed from the beginning, right? You buy the device and it has malware. That is persistent. That does not go away. The only way to get rid of it is to get rid of the device. So it will continue to do exactly what you said over and over again.
Let's step back maybe and define malware, because if I buy a device brand new, I assume it doesn't have anything that's detrimental to my use of the machine or the device, I mean, or my lifestyle or any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it that companies, I mean, I figure if I buy a phone by, I'll just say fill in the blank rather than casting aspersions on any brand.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume that they have control over what's on that device. And so if there's malware there, it's because the device manufacturer allowed it to be on there. Is that an unfair assumption on my part?
I think it might be. I think it could be that the supply chain has been infiltrated, right? So the manufacturer packages it up. There's, as far as they've done their testing, there's no malware, but somewhere between shipment and destination, it's been intercepted and malware has been inserted mm-hmm. in some way. So
the supply chain then becomes the big problem, I imagine, for your federal customers, and making sure that when a device lands inside an agency, it's clean. Does that involve wiping every device, or what's the strategy for managing these devices from the minute they come in the door?
Well, the malware can be detected, right? So I don't think you need to go to those types of extremes,
uh-huh.
But maybe loading something that provides the security that you need and detects the malware. And so you understand, hey, you know, I need to destroy this device because it's been infected.
And the third of those is malicious mobile data exfiltration is a global problem. And I said at the beginning of our conversation, and I think it's probably the case for most people, I would figure that the data that's being exfiltrated, especially from federal government networks, is most likely headed to China or Russia. That's not what you found. Most of it's staying here within our own borders. Is that right, Bob?
It is, yes. And there's a couple of other countries that it, like the UK, is another popular destination, the Netherlands. And I can tell you that probably a large reason for that is we have the bulk of the data centers, right? So it's just easier to exfiltrate the data here and then export it later. It's also makes it harder to detect,
mm-hmm.
right? If it stays within the United States, is it really, I mean, who's going to look at that, right?
That's
unless
right.
you have cause to do it.
Right.
Right. So so I think for those couple of reasons that, you know, it does tend to stay here.
So the end stealer, I don't want to use the term end user, the end stealer isn't, it's possible they're not in the United States, but the data, when it leaves the networks and goes into the hands of the bad guys, those bad guys, or at least their machines, are within the United States to start with. Do I have the right read on that?
Yes, yes. And then from there, I think what we found is that there's about 20 other countries that the data is exfiltrated to, you know, could, you know, including China and, you know, the Middle East and other places. We found this one particular exfiltration was headed to Pakistan. So, you know, it's going all over the place.
Do we can we trace it any more specifically than that? I mean, we've seen attributions to specific cities and locations within cities and so on. Is that overstating it, or can we actually be that precise, do you think?
I think the government can be more precise than that.
I see.
Right.
Those of us speculating on a radio show can't, I understand. Let me step back one more degree, actually. I tend to stereotype mobile devices, and I'm using air quotes there, as phones and tablets. Am I narrowing the scope too much when we think about mobile and mobile security?
I think so. It's really the Internet of Things. Right? And we think more and more devices are going to be wireless or mobile enabled. I'm sure you've heard people say that, hey, you know, my refrigerator is going to have an IP address and it'll let people know when I'm out of milk, right? And that's interesting, but that isn't the thing that really concerns me. What would concern me from a mobile perspective is that my home alarm system has mobile capabilities, right? And if somebody hacks into it, now they own my home, right? Not my refrigerator.
Yeah. So, well, you know, even an access situation that we learned about at my house this week after a lockout situation is we're going to get a garage door opener that I can open from my phone. But that's an access point. I mean, somebody would love to be able to get into my house and through my garage door opener if they could program it the same way that my phone's programmed. Is that an example of what you're talking about?
It is. Yes, it is an example. Yeah. You know, the Tesla is another example. You know, that has mobile capability. So if you hack into the Tesla, you can pretty much take control of the car.
Hack somebody's car. Unbelievable. So the reason I ask that is as we think about a bring your own device strategy, it potentially could mean something completely different in a year or 2 years or 5 years for a federal agency than what it means today. Is that right?
It is. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, and our founders have this really good talk track about mobile devices and the future of mobile devices, and they get to see a lot of the future. Because, you know, they're traveling the world and there's a lot of inexpensive smartphones that are coming out from all kinds of different places and all kinds of different countries. Right. So. So, yes, the mobile environment is changing and changing rapidly.
I recall, and I told you about during the break, the first time that Vivek Kundra talked about bring your own device in government was an FCA Bethesda event. I believe it was in 2010 or 2011. And the agency IT people in the audience, their jaws dropped, and the vendors in the audience started salivating at the potential opportunity there. And my first thought at that time was, it wouldn't surprise me to see like a hot list. Here are 10 devices, different operating systems and so on, that we approve, that we know, that we can ascertain are secure enough that they can go on our device or on our networks. That never happened. Because mainly of that transition we talked about in the first part of our conversation, the emphasis of securing data rather than securing devices. Is that something that we could see reemerge potentially at some point in the future? Because I've followed the controversy about Huawei devices, for example, which essentially are made by the Chinese government. I mean, Huawei's pretty much a subsidiary of the Chinese government for all intents and purposes. And the idea that somebody would want to bring a Huawei device to a federal agency and get it on the network would probably be troubling to some folks within that agency.
I agree with that. And I think that, you know, as agencies do transition to BYOD, I think that they will have a list of devices that they'll support on their infrastructure, which I, you know, I think is appropriate because you don't want a Huawei device showing up anywhere, especially in the government.
We talked a little bit during the break also about the term defense in depth. How do you define that, and what does that mean to people who are trying to secure mobile devices in government?
So mobile device managers have been around for a while. The government has slowly adapted them, and that is a piece of mobile security, right? It's but it's really kind of a really good policy enforcer. So that's one aspect of security and defense for mobile, right? The second is a container, right? And again, containers are good at, you know, keeping your business life separate from your personal life and adding encryption and things like that. But they don't represent a secure environment for a mobile world, right? So you really need kind of a combination of the MDM, the container, and then an application for the device that allows you to secure the applications, the operating system, the firmware, and et cetera, on the device itself. So mm-hmm. it's an in-depth strategy that I think the government needs to really look at and embrace.
Is it your sense? I understand it's a strategy that's successful today. Is it your sense, though, that it's mature, or is it something that will be continuously evolving as the threat landscape evolves and changes?
I think it has to continue to evolve because the threat landscape continues to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're talking about three components today. You know, 2 years from now, it could be five components
mm-hmm.
That are required.
And when I say mature, is it mature? I don't mean to imply that what we're using today is not sufficient to do the job today, but whether it's robust enough to last, or whether, as you said, it's something that needs to continue to evolve as threats change.
Right. Yeah. It does continue because you think about it, right? Another threat vector has become these rogue cell towers that are out there, right? So how do you detect those?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's something that's going to have to be added.
We have a link to your Enterprise Mobile Threats 2014 Year in Review at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Bob, what are the conclusions that we should take away from this as we look at this information and look at the data that you've included?
It's an opportunity to see how the threats have evolved in the mobile world, how they transition to the United States, how they could protect. I mean, how they could potentially impact us as consumers as well, and you can also check out how Lookout can help you solve those problems.